ideal. So what did we discuss last night?
Attachment to matter causes bondage, and attachment to Lord or its giver, dear devotees, causes liberation.
One wants to progress spiritually, one should develop attachment to the spiritual master.
Any other points?
Perfection comes from serving sadhus.
That is the message of the Bhagavatam. Any other points?
We should check regularly that we develop these spiritual qualities like Veronica, Tiksha, compassion, tolerance, being friend of all living entities, having no enemies.
Because mind has to be given a lot of emphasis on, which helps us intensely rather than just on the left side, because then the rest of us.
Guru Padasraya is first step to go back.
Almost like shelter of the Guru.
Whichever ashram we are there, we should practice renunciation.
Sorry?
In whichever ashram one is there, renunciation is the common theme. Renounce the desire for man.
Vairagya Vijaya, Nija Bhakti Yogena.
So I just wanted to ask a question. You talked about attachment, and it has to be diverted into the service of the spiritual master or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Can we actually look at that point where attachment and the mind cannot be stagnant, where they, I think in Bhagavad Gita it sort of says that we can't just not think anything, it has to be diverted to something. Similarly, attachment is something we can't just say, I'm not going to attach anything, renounce artificially. It has to be diverted into the service of Krishna. That's the
proper perception or understanding. That attachment is the nature of the soul. We're all attached. That's the nature of spirit or life, is to be attached. But at this point in time, our attachment has become contaminated and material. It's become, our senses and our mind are attached to material things. Whereas on the pure platform, we're attached to spirit, we're attached to Krishna, and things related to Krishna.
The word attachment here means desire, correct?
Same principle. So it's the process of bhakti, means to cleanse the contamination in the heart for the attachment to matter. Any other points?
Can I think that attachment is like knife? Because we say that part and parcel of Krishna, when this hand is attached to me, similarly we should be attached to Krishna.
Yeah, we can say it well. Any other points?
The Prabhupada said many times that we are spiritual, therefore we cannot be attached to material world. We can never be happy in the material world.
They say there are four reasons why people pray to God. One of the first reasons people pray to God is out of fear. And then what we said in the last class, escape from pain is one of the reasons we run to Krishna. They say there are four reasons. For the first reason, the most primitive reason is fear. The second is desire, to fulfill desires. The third is a sense of duty or gratitude. And the fourth is love or faith. So consciousness goes through the gradations. It evolves. And ultimately, the purest motive is love.
What's that based upon?
One of the Maharaj's article in it.
Guru, you mentioned in the class, Guru is like Asha Vigraha.
He is the Ashwarati Brahma.
You checked that the verses 25 to 27, that is Samman Dabi there and Ravada.
Did I check?
Yeah.
No. I'll try to remember. Remind me at the end of the class. No, I'm not sure.
Question. Talk about that time and the adjustment you have to make from regular rituals. People like you don't think about making the adjustment from when to make or what option to make.
What's the question?
Last week we talked about the regular rituals one has to check.
What are you doing out there, little boy?
Sorry, but I have to go home for something important. So.
Question. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah. How do you know if you're on track or off track or the right time to do it?
How do we know? I don't understand the point. What's the point?
So you mentioned that last time we have to go.
Yeah, I understand that. But then what's the point?
Now how do we know? This is our style. Or do you want to check or to take a break and look and back?
How do we know?
How do we know when to check and what to check? I just pressed that.
Is that what it is? When means you can choose. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says every cottage, you mentioned that last night. It should be done some regular interval. You choose. Once a month, like that, whenever it is. Yeah, you choose. But yeah, it has to be some, you have to look at ourselves regularly. And what to check for? You can check for the 26 qualities of the devotees. Am I developing devotional qualities? Am I becoming less attached to the material energy? Is my chanting improving? Am I developing more devotion for my deity? Am I becoming more attached to following my spiritual master's instructions? Am I fulfilling his instructions, his desires? There's many things you can check. Is that okay?
Do you
can do that. That's up to you. If you want to, then. Okay. Any other points?
Maybe we should have a workshop, like we should have a counseling sessions here in Melbourne Temple, where senior devotees form a team, and then those of them who are really interested, they can have a regular, maybe once in 6 months or once in a year, a session where are you, what is that you are doing, what adjustments are you doing, what is required now, can we support you, can we help you. This on a workshop, maybe a 1 day workshop or 2 day workshop in a year, would give us a good oiling massage tool.
So there's two ways we can do it. We can either go through the temple authorities and try to organize something, or we can just do it amongst the Bhakti Vaibhav class. And if you want to organize, then I can facilitate that.
Yes.
So yeah, if you organize, then we can do it. It's not a bad idea. So. Any other points?
The amount progresses in Bhakti, devotional service, that much amount one loses taste for material and sense in general. And Bhakti is so sukham, it is joyful and very easy
to do. Yeah, that's good. So we see from the development of the beginning of the chapter where Kapila Dev begins to instruct on Sankhya Yoga, then it is described that we must regulate our lifestyle and begin to practice devotional service in the mode of goodness. Right? If we want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to begin to practice devotional service in the mode of goodness. If you practice devotional service in the mode of passion or ignorance, it will be very difficult to advance in Krishna consciousness. So we have to begin to develop devotional service in the mode of goodness. Then Kapila Dev immediately goes into the essential instructions that are necessary for one to liberate oneself from the material energy. So he begins to instruct that the problem with everyone in the material world is that they are bound to the material energy through their false ego, to the conception of aham mameti, I and mine. And because of this false concept of being the enjoyer, or the having this Purusha Bhav of being separate from Krishna and enjoying separately from Krishna, then because of that we develop such qualities as lust and greed, which are the gateways to hell, which bind us to this material energy. And then Kapila Dev, he extends that point, and then he gives the remedy or the cure for that, which we discussed last night. One must divert one's attachment from the material energy to saintly personalities, because this is the process which is being mentioned by the Srimad Bhagavatam. One must become attached to serving one's spiritual master, and factually speaking, that is the secret of success in spiritual life. By fulfilling the order of the spiritual master, then one attains all perfection. Without fulfilling the instruction of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. That is the secret of spiritual life. So he gives emphasis to serving and becoming attached to sattvas as the cause for liberation from this material world. Now tonight, Devahuti will begin to question Kapila Dev further, and she will begin to ask specifically about the process of devotional service which he is mentioning. He has emphasized that the process of purification is to hear and chant in the association of saintly personalities. That is the process of liberation which he recommends and emphasizes, and that is the process which Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya, emphasizes. And by associating with pure devotees and hearing chanting, this is how we become liberated from the material energy. So now, Devahuti will begin to ask for more clearer instructions or more detailed instructions on these points which Kapila Dev has mentioned. And now he, tonight, will go from verses 28 to 37. Then he will begin to describe or add into the discussion, along with hearing and chanting, which is the Bhagavad Vidhimag, or the process of approaching Krishna through hearing and chanting. He will then emphasize simultaneously, one must practice the Pancharatrika Vidhimag, which means the process of deity worship. One must worship the deity. Simultaneously, you must hear and chant about Krishna and you must worship the deity. And by this combined process, then the conditioned soul will become liberated from the material energy. This is the process of that. And if you look at ISKCON, Prabhupada says that ISKCON is meant for fulfilling this desire of the Lord. It is meant to give facility for the living entities to become purified from material contamination. That is the purpose of ISKCON. And if you see in ISKCON, Prabhupada has perfectly applied the process which has been described in the Srimad Bhagavatam of hearing and chanting and worshipping the deity. And by performing these activities, then we become perfect. This is the path of perfection which has been described. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Devotional service to progress, one should do in the mode of goodness. So, in terms of practicality, should we say that the chanting should be done in Brahma Muhurta time, because that's the first step we do?
What do you think?
Yeah, that's the first practical part we have to do. And then, what else can be done in terms of practical aspect in mode of goodness?
Many things. I mean, if you look at everything now. But mode of goodness means regulation. So it means there has to be regulation in our lives. So it means we have to regulate ourselves, that we follow a balanced and regulated program of mode of goodness means you'll make enough time to do all of the devotional activities properly. It means you chant your rounds properly, not in the mode of passion or in the mode of ignorance, which has their symptoms, right? But you chant your rounds properly. If you make time on a regular basis to read Prabhupada's books, you make time to listen to lectures by your spiritual master, Prabhupada and other personalities, you make time to worship the deities nicely, to cook your offering, your bhoga, and offer it to your deities or your pictures within your home, your altar, you make time to do that nicely. That is in the mode of goodness. Keeping yourself clean, like that, keeping the house clean, seeing it as a temple of the deity, these kind of things are activities in the mode of goodness. So it's very difficult to do that because the way society is now is that people are being forced to act passionately, which leads to ignorance. But we should try to maintain it to the best of our ability, the mode of goodness. Does that help?
Yeah, summarizing that we need to allocate enough time.
Mode of goodness means enough time. When we get too much in the mode of passion as devotees, then we see that we don't have enough time for our sadhana because of mode of passion. Or if we get too much in the mode of passion, then we get too tired, we get to the mode of ignorance, then we sleep too much, and we don't wake up late and all these things. Go to bed late, wake up late, don't have proper time for chanting nicely. These things. Is that okay? Yeah. There's much more that can be said, but I think that's basic. Okay. So, we'll begin with verse 28. On hearing this statement of the Lord, Devahuti inquired, "What kind of devotional service is worth developing and practicing to help me easily and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet?" Rasa, you like to read that one?
It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that no one is spared apart from rendering service to the Lord. Whether one is a woman or a laborer or a merchant, if he engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord, he is promoted to the highest perfectional state and goes back home back to Godhead. The devotional service most suitable for different types of devotees is determined and fixed by the mercy of the spiritual master.
So what are the points here?
Depending on one's ability and inclination, one can choose whatever type of devotional service, but do that very well. That can take you back to it. Do not give only one particular type, but do whichever is your most suitable for you, based on your ability and inclination.
It is really not up to us to basically decide what sort of devotional, service is suitable for me to perform, depending upon my own inclination. Let's take this instruction from the spiritual master. Devahuti is a very highly enlightened devotee. It was she had the whole association of the devotee husband, the devotee husband. Yet she is asking, putting herself in a very humble situation, and inquiring from basically her own son, recognizing his superior relative position, that what should I perform to basically go back to God? So it's really not, for up to us to basically choose. In that sense, you are a spiritual master. If you go in this way, inquire, that knowing me fully well, what should I do to go back to God?
So, as Prabhupada is saying here, that no one is barred from performing devotional service. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction, and the teachings of his movement is that anyone can become a pure devotee of Krishna. And there's no material qualification which disqualifies one from taking to devotional service. You see in the example that Mahaprabhu has installed Haridas Thakur as the Naam Acharya. And Mahaprabhu's entire movement is the Sankirtan movement. It is to spread the holy name of Krishna. And he chose to emphasize this point, that Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur appeared within a Muslim family. So he was considered, according to Hindu culture, he was considered an outcast, a fallen personality, outside of Hindu culture or Hindu tradition. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him, even though he was considered fallen from a material perspective by some people. He considered him to be the topmost devotee. In other words, there's no disqualification for taking to devotional service. Anyone can take to devotional service. Prabhupada says, and we see the example from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, even a dog can take to devotional service. Dogs have been liberated, just like the dog of Sivananda Sen. Sivananda Sen gave him mercy, treated him as a devotee, and then Mahaprabhu fed him his own coconut pulp. Mahaprabhu gave him his own remnants, right, and the dog went back to Godhead. Like that. So no one is barred from devotional service. Now, how to engage in devotional service? Prabhupada emphasizes the spiritual master will examine the psychophysical makeup of the devotees. He will see what is your mentality, what is your inclination, what is your physical capacity. Like that. So according to your psychology and your physical nature, the guru or the senior Vaishnavas on the guru's behalf will engage you according to your proclivity or your nature. Just like my spiritual master, he wrote to me many years ago, and when I was a new devotee, and he said, you work under the temple authorities, Korma Prabhu and Anirudha Prabhu, and they will give you your service. Not that the spiritual master may give you every single instruction, but under the instruction of either the spiritual master directly or his representatives, then you are engaged in devotional service. That is the process. Like that. So, according to our nature, we'll be engaged appropriately, and that will best to purify us. And if someone is engaged according to their nature, they'll become most purified. Just like for myself, and many devotees, but if my service is to wash the pots, if that was my main service, I wouldn't become purified properly, because I don't have the psychophysical makeup for it. I'd become too, you know, bored too quickly, and I wouldn't become purified. Whereas for another devotee, they can do that same activity, and for them, that's the best service for them. And they can attain perfection because their mind and their body is being engaged in the best way to become purified in Krishna's service. So when we engage in devotional service according to the most suitable way for us, according to our nature, then we become the most purified.
Does that require a very personal association and a bond between the spiritual master and the disciple, for a spiritual master to infer what my disciple is quite capable of doing? So I engage like that.
So is that a comment or question?
Yeah, you said that's basically not a question, that a spiritual master and disciple has to have that bond. It's not that just to basically take an initiation. The spiritual master has to know you to be able to actually give you the specifications.
So, yeah, so there needs to be association. That's the point. So the guru has to associate sufficiently with the disciple. If he cannot, just like Prabhupada had 10,000 disciples, 5,000 disciples, 10,000 disciples, so he said, okay, the authorities will do it on my behalf. Like Radhanath Swami may not get involved in every disciple's life because he has so many disciples, but then he sets up a counseling system and he says, okay, this senior disciple will give advice to the, or counseling or instruction to the junior, the guidance to the junior disciple.
How can basically the counselor can be considered the same as the guru, although guru is empowered to basically give the instruction? They're both, you know, the different person.
Yeah, but when basically, like Prabhupada said, guru is one, the principle is one, right? So when the guru has realization or is learning, or when any advanced devotee gives us instruction, it's for our benefit. And you'll see that basically, in certain situations, most of the senior devotees will give us the same advice. They won't give us like vastly different, generally. Sometimes, some may give us like, you know, one may advise that way, one may advise that way. Or sometimes there may be differing opinions and so on, but generally, in principle, they'll give you similar advice. Okay. So you can take it that Krishna is guiding you. If the person is qualified, you can see that Krishna is guiding you through that person.
In the case of a counseling system, it's a Siksha Guru who is taking a disciple back to God on behalf of the Siksha Guru.
Yeah, Guru is one. It's the principle. That's the point. Okay. Both gurus are taking you back, yeah? The day my spiritual master initiated me, he said, do not think it is just me alone who will take you back to Godhead. And he said, many devotees will help you. He said, don't just take shelter of me. He said, form relationship with other senior Vaishnavas also. He always encouraged that mood. Not that he was like a singular personality, but he said, develop relationship with others. He said, it'll take many people to take you back to Godhead, not just me. So that should be the mood. That's the mood of the Sampradaya. You see all through the Sampradaya. Like when devotees approach, Raghunath Das Goswami approached Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu said, go to Swarup Damodar. You put him under the care of Swarup Damodar. That's the mood of the Sampradaya. When Balabhacharya approached Mahaprabhu, and then he said that I have written a commentary on the Bhagavatam, which surpasses Sridhar Swami and so forth. And he was approaching in a mood of being proud. Then Mahaprabhu, he said, I learned to show him what is humility. He said, I learned this from Ramananda Roy. I learned this from Swarup Damodar. I learned this from Haridas Thakur. I learned this from Sanatana Goswami. So he was showing this is the mood of the devotee. The guru doesn't think it's just me who will take everyone back to Godhead. The guru sees that it is all the Vaishnavas are wonderful and they have the ability to instruct us and guide us. So he automatically puts us in the care of all the Vaishnavas. Right? The Diksha Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Diksha Guru is generally is the principal Shiksha Guru. He's generally the main person who gives you your Shiksha. That's why you take initiation from him. But you have many Shiksha Gurus. Shiksha Guru means, Guru means plural. Vandeham, Shri Guru, Shri Yuta, Pada Kamalan, Shri Gurun, Vaishnavams Cha. Right? Shri Gurun means plural. Right? Shri Gurun, many. Vandeham, Shri Guru, that means Diksha Guru. Shri Yuta, Pada Kamalan, Shri Gurun means many. Vaishnavams Cha. I offer my obeisances to my spiritual master, to many of my gurus, or to all the Vaishnavas. Shri Rupam, Sagra Jatam. There's many personalities in our Sampradaya. That is our mood. We don't just take shelter of one personality, and the more you become advanced as a devotee, then you begin to take shelter of more of the disciplic succession. Then Rupa Goswami becomes prominent in your life. Sanatana Goswami becomes prominent in your life. Right, Raghunath Das Goswami becomes prominent in your life. Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Prabhu, Gadadhar, so many personalities become prominent in your life. But still you have one Diksha Guru who connects you to everyone. That is our system. So we worship everyone through our Diksha Guru, but simultaneously we get the mercy, we seek the mercy of all the personalities, the Vaishnava personalities, and the Lord through our Diksha Guru, like that.
So from the first instructions of Rupa Goswami in terms of taking the shelter, becoming initiated and following the instructions, they apply to the Diksha Guru, isn't it? There. The Diksha Guru can direct the instructions through the Siksha Guru.
The first instruction is
take the shelter of the modified spiritual master.
Yeah, which is Guru Pad, that's right, right? But then, the second instruction, right, he actually says, take Diksha, take Shiksha. He says simultaneously, he says both, right? And then he says, take instruction. I think secondly it says take instruction, and then he says take Diksha. And I think the fourth, from memory, it's been a while since I've studied particularly, but then he says, follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So Diksha means like that, but then Shiksha means automatically many personalities. So within the first five, he's already mentioned the whole principle of Guru, right? Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru, the previous acharyas, all these things. And these are the most important elements of bhakti. I think so. Get a point?
What if the authorities engage you, what you said, when you're boring service and you're with this third instead of being happy?
Then you have to ask for another service. See, the point is that ISKCON should be a movement where the devotees are. It should be a dynamic movement where devotees are counseled in such a way, and they are engaged in such a way they always feel enlivened in their service. It shouldn't be that, you know, ISKCON shouldn't be a movement where we don't feel connected to our authority. You know? Maybe it's like that, but that shouldn't be the way it is. It should be that the authority we have a deep relationship with. Right? And we feel, like you see in Chaupati, the relationship between the counselors and the counselees, you see there is a deep relationship there, a deep bond there. And they're being looked after and they're being advised by their counselors in an appropriate way. And it should be that whenever we feel dissatisfied, we should be able to approach our authorities and say, I'm feeling dissatisfied. And they should feel empathic or feeling that they want to help that devotee or assist that devotee.
And if there is no one else to do the service?
So then that's when it comes down to, you know, we're in Melbourne. Just like if you look at the globe, you know, if you look at the whole planet, we're in, you know, if, like I was looking at the Atlas today because they had this cyclone in Burma.
Yep.
So you know, I said to Jagannath Balabha, he said, where is Burma? And I said, oh, it's over here. I thought it was more near, closer to Malaysia. He said, no, it's not there. And I said, yeah, that's where it is. I was thinking of Borneo. I was thinking that's where I was thinking Burma was. And he said, no, it's not there. So then we opened up the Atlas to have a look. And then I was looking at, you know, where Burma is. Then I was looking at the whole world. And then I thought, because when you see the planet, you know, from a distance on the Atlas, you know, and you look at where Melbourne is, you know, we're like, we're very removed from the rest of the world, you know. We're a long way away from anywhere. So the fact that the Sankirtan movement is even existing here is amazing. The Prabhupada could come and establish this temple in the middle of Kali Yuga in such a distant place. And for the movement to go on, sometimes it will take sacrifice. And it means the devotees will have to do services which they may not enjoy doing so much, but for the purpose of keeping ISKCON going and the Sankirtan movement going and the temple going and serving Radha Balabha, sometimes you have to make sacrifice. So sometimes we have to do that. I know myself as a devotee, there's been many times where I've had to do a lot of things which I didn't necessarily want to do. But we understand that's the mood of sacrifice. We have to do it. We have to do what's necessary to keep the movement going. But that, you know, I mean, ideally that shouldn't have to happen year after year after year. Because the devotees are, we are people, we do have a psychophysical makeup. And we do need to be engaged according to our nature. So if we're not engaged according to our nature, we will become despondent. So then you have to speak to your authorities, you have to speak to your spiritual master and try to reconcile something.
I'm not speaking to myself.
Okay. Then you can try to give some counsel to someone who you're speaking about. But that's the basic principle. The point is in ISKCON, the mood should be so close between the authorities and the devotees who are following the authorities. The mood should be so close, there should be very
easily approachable.
Easily approachable, but also very like deep
bond of affection.
Close. Very close.
Yeah, very close. But very deep communication.
Transparency.
Yeah. Transparency. But you should be able to communicate things very deeply from your heart. And the authorities should be able to give you deep instruction based on that. That should be the way it is. And if it's not like that, then that's unfortunate. You have to find those kind of relationships. We have to find somewhere, you know, devotees that we can take shelter of, who will look after us. Like that, we have to find those devotees as much as possible. Okay? Okay.
This partly been answered, but coming back to your point, when you say if somebody engages you in dishwashing or pot washing, you will not be very happy with that for a long time. But there is also a parallel thought, line of thought, that the service is very hard, nobody is willing to take, and if you take that one.
So you get more mercy because you are going against your will and against your natural taste. And I also heard from some senior devotee that it's not what you want, it's what Krishna wants you to do the service. Mm. So these things are really little bit contradictory. And so do we really have to choose a service which we think, okay, nobody is taking it and it's also not in my really liking, so I do this one?
Yep. In devotional service, you have to do what is necessary. That's the point. That's the point. You have to do what is necessary to keep the mood. Just like Prabhupada gave the example, he was in Mayapur, and there was wheat, or maybe it was rice, growing in the fields. So Prabhupada said, generally, he was explaining that the brahmana's duty is usually to teach, to worship the deities, to perform yajna. This is their generally. But Prabhupada was explaining that if the rice is grown, if the crop is ready to sow, ready to harvest, Prabhupada said, then the brahmana, if there's no one else to do it, then the brahmana should go out into the field and harvest the crop. He should pick the grains. He can't say, well, I'm a brahmana, I can't do that. Right? Then that's his duty, that's his responsibility. So Prabhupada said, you have to do the needful. That's Krishna consciousness. But in general, we need to act according to our nature. That's the general principle. To be satisfied as devotees. Like I said, like, you know, if my service was to wash the pots, I'd probably only last, you know, half an hour. You know, if it was like, you know, I could be the pot washer in the temple if the temple was full of very, very advanced devotees. Right? And if I felt, or if I understood that I was the most neophyte devotee in the temple, in the sense that, like, do you understand my point? Right? If I was like the most, you know, the least qualified devotee in the temple in terms of my knowledge and in terms of my, you know, my abilities and so forth, then, you know, like, you know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Radhanath Swami and, you know, Shivaram Swami, I mean, Naranjan Swami and Ladananda Swami, that's what the temple is made up of, I just go and wash the pots because I understand my position. You know, let those empowered personalities do the service because they're much more qualified than me, and I'll just wash the pots and then I'll be perfect and I'll be satisfied because I'm their assistant. Right? But then we have to see what is the necessity. If I go and wash the pots, then who will teach the course? Right? So therefore I have to do this service. Right? But if I see there's more qualified devotees to do this service, then I'll go and wash the pots and assist them. And that, so you have to act according to your nature, and ultimately the mood is surrender. We want to surrender to Krishna. That's our mood. So we'll do whatever is necessary. Right? But simultaneously, does it make sense what I'm saying?
The only thing is, if we do what we like, then there is surrender and there is sacrifice.
Because it's like, you know, for me to teach this course, right, there is surrender, there is sacrifice. It's not easy to do any service for Krishna. Doesn't matter what service you do for Krishna, there is surrender, there is sacrifice. You're doing it for Krishna, that is surrender. Right?
If you like it as well.
So that's good, that's what Krishna wants. Krishna doesn't say in the Bhagavad Gita, do all the services that you don't like doing. He never says that. He says, act according to your nature. Right? He says in the 18th chapter, that if you don't act according to your nature, then no, that's third chapter. That's third chapter. But in the 18th chapter, he describes. He said that you will, yeah, better to what?
It's better to do one's duty perfectly rather than engage in another one's duty and perfectly.
Krishna says that in the 18th chapter. That's
this is fourth chapter.
But it's 18th chapter. He said in the 18th chapter, it's better to do your duty perfectly than try to imitate another's. He makes a similar point in the fourth chapter also. About that. So this is the point, that Krishna is giving that instruction. You have to act according to your nature. You can't act otherwise. It's not possible to act otherwise. And you become most pure, that's what Prabhupada just said here, you become most purified by acting according to your nature. Does it make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Can I ask one question?
Okay.
If we are, if bodily, if we are quite weak, then
You can't cook for your family?
Not family, in the temple service.
You mean the...
We are not very capable, fit enough to work.
You mean the big pots?
Yeah, big pots and maybe a large amount of cooking and engaging in large feast service.
Yeah, but for the deities you can cook. Because the deities you cook a smaller amount.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But for the big, like the Saturday feast, Sunday feast, then you can let the men do it. Because they have to stir the pots and it's very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
And for the deities also, you don't have to take Brahmin for the deities.
Do you?
Yeah, you have to take Brahmin.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. You shouldn't touch the deities on this second initiative.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Then take Brahmin.
Krishna's not the one.
Ask your Guru Maharaj.
Actually, I was thinking doing one's duty is not easy because it's different than doing what you like, what you don't like. To do what you like, what you don't like is a matter of passion. And it's mind, I like, I don't like. But to overcome amount of passion, you need to engage in duty that will elevate you to the amount of goodness. So we should not only choose what we like, what we don't like, but be dutiful. Of course, when performing one's duty, Prabhupada said there are a lot of difficulties and it's not easy to perform. Sometimes, for example, if in marriage we have problems, we don't feel like staying, but you have to do your duty. Sometimes you get hurt, you don't feel like serving your husband, for example, I'm saying. So it's not easy to do the duty, and sometimes it's most of the time, but that will elevate one to the mode of goodness. Mode of passion means I do what I like and I avoid what I don't like. And this is one of the anarthas.
Yeah.
We avoid unpleasant things and we try to situate in pleasant things. But if doing duties, you're accepting pleasant and unpleasant things equally and you are undeviated from your duties.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. What's that? The mystic yoga system, as you have explained, aims at the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is meant for completely ending material existence. Please let me know the nature of that yoga system. How many ways are there by which one can understand? How many ways are there by which one can understand, in truth, that sublime yoga? So Prabhupada explains within the purport that Bhakti Yoga aims at Bhagavan realization. Jnana Yoga aims at understanding Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Ashtanga Yoga aims at understanding Paramatma. And Bhakti Yoga aims at understanding Bhagavan. So therefore, it is the topmost yoga system. This is explained by Krishna at the end of the 6th chapter of the Gita. This of all yoga systems, of all yogis, the devotee or devotional service is the topmost yoga. That's why Kapila Dev has only emphasized bhakti yoga so far. He's not emphasizing any other system. He's emphasizing bhakti yoga. And we saw the Kardama Muni became perfect through bhakti yoga. This is the topmost yoga system. So Prabhupada mentions that when one performs devotional service, in the Sanskrit, it mentions devotional service is like a... Or actually, Prabhupada, he just quotes this, he just used this word, bana, in the end of the in the end of the purport. Bana means it is like an arrow. Bhakti yoga is like firing an arrow. When you aim an arrow, right, if you're a very good archer, like Arjuna, he only saw the eye of the bird. So in devotional service we must be like, take this example of Arjuna, we only see the eye of the bird. Ekeha Kuru Nandana. We're not distracted by anything else. So Bhakti Yoga means we just focus on Krishna and then we aim directly at Krishna. And then Prabhupada says Bhakti Yoga is very swift. Right? Just like an arrow goes very quickly. Bhakti yoga is much faster than any of the other processes. Right? All the other processes take a great deal of time to become perfect. If you want to become perfect, it will take lifetimes. But bhakti yoga, you can become perfect in one lifetime. It is immediate. so powerful, and it cuts all the way through the all the different coverings of the universe, right? All through the different coverings which cover us in this material world. Bhakti Yoga cuts through and immediately aims directly at Krishna. So Prabhupada says it is very sharp, it is very swift, it cuts through anything, and it effectively takes us directly to Krishna. But you must apply the process without committing offences. If you perform offenseless devotional service, you can very quickly come to the platform of full realization. Bhakti Yogi Ki. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the statement of his mother, Kapila could understand her purpose, and he became compassionate towards her because of being born of her body. My dear son, Kapila. My dear son, Kapila, after all, I am a woman. It is very difficult for me to understand the absolute truth because my intelligence is not very great. If you will kindly explain it to me, even though I am not very intelligent, I can understand it and thereby feel transcendental happiness. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that even if one is unintelligent, you don't have to think that because I'm a woman, I am unintelligent. The nature of everyone in Kali Yuga is that we are unintelligent in general. People are not very intelligent, actually, compared to the previous ages. So, even if you're an unintelligent personality, by the mercy of the spiritual master, everything can be revealed to you if you're simply a sincere devotee. Because by the spiritual master's grace, all the purports or the imports of the Vedic knowledge can be revealed within the heart of a sincere disciple. One who has faith in Krishna and in Guru. All the imports of Vedic knowledge are simultaneously, automatically revealed. So it comes down to one's sincerity. So because Devahuti is extremely sincere, then Kapila Devi is pleased with her sincere attitude, and he will, by his grace, his favour, he will instruct her in such a way that everything will become understandable. This is how our spiritual master deals with us. The spiritual master will speak in such a way because if he's pleased with your favourable service attitude, then he speaks with you to you in such a way that he'll make you understand everything. Right? And being pleased upon you, everything will be revealed in your heart by his grace. Krishna will reveal everything within your heart. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the statement of his mother, Kapila could understand her purpose, and he became compassionate towards her because of being born of her body. He described the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is a combination of devotional service and mystic realization, as received by disciplic succession. Lord Kapila said,
what is the meaning of that? Devotional service and mystic realization. What
does
it mean?
In the Sanskrit, it says Sankhya Pravacha. In Pravacha, he described by, in fact, bhakti, devotional vitana spreading, yogam, mystic yoga. Devotional service and mystic realization. Prabhupada's translated, it is said bhakti vitana yogam, like that. So if you take it together, generally we'll see bhakti yoga, which means devotional service. If you take the two words separately, then Prabhupada will translate one as devotional service and the other one as mystic yoga, because yoga generally, we'll see yoga means to connect with something else. Right, that's like through a mystic process, like that. So generally we take it as one thing. By devotional service, we connect to Krishna through a mystic process. By our bhakti, then yoga means we connect. I think. So does that make some sense?
To my understanding over there is the devotional service is a process, and mystic realization is the effect of the process. So what has been highlighted is that it is not only the process, but you will realize the full purport of, you know, the process. So Sankhya is very complete in itself. That is what he's going to teach.
Lord Kapila said, the senses are symbolic representations of the demigods, and their natural inclination is to work under the direction of the Vedic injunctions. As the senses are representatives of the demigods, so the mind is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mind's natural duty is to serve. When that service spirit is engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without any motive, that is far better than salvation. So the natural function of the mind and the senses is to
serve
Krishna. That is the natural function, right? It is only because our senses and mind have become contaminated that we are attracted to other things. But you'll see the actual function of the mind is to be attracted to Krishna. Sometimes we get some mercy and we become absorbed in Krishna, focused upon Krishna, and we feel this is completely natural. Right? To be focused upon Krishna is the most natural function of the mind. And to engage the senses in the service of Krishna is the most natural function of the senses. And we feel completely whole sometimes when we perform our devotional service, because the mind and the senses are engaged in their natural activity. But because our mind and senses become contaminated in this material world, then we become attached to things other than serving Krishna. And then we become attached to other personalities and other objects, and we begin to serve them. But we never feel the same satisfaction in the mind or in the senses. The same satisfaction never comes. That natural satisfaction which comes from serving Krishna, which is found in the mind, that never comes. That only comes when we focus the mind and the senses upon Krishna. So that is the process of Bhakti Yoga, which Narada Muni says in the very beginning, which Rupa Goswami quotes in the very beginning of the Nectar of Devotion. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam Bhakti Ujjate. To engage the mind and the senses in the service of Krishna, that is Bhakti Yoga. That is the process. That is how we become purified in our mind and our heart. So,
what is the significance of the analogy of the senses compared with the demigods in the mind compared to the Supreme Personality of God? He's trying to say that the senses should serve the mind like the demigods serve the Supreme Lord.
Not so much an analogy, but it's actually explaining that the demigods are in control of the senses.
Okay.
All the senses are actually controlled by devas.
Yes.
Not that. Now, you look at the senses, like the arms are controlled by
Indra.
Right, he controls the arms like that. So, the arms are controlled by Indra. Now, what does Indra do? Indra fully engages in the service of Krishna. Very advanced devotee. Even though, you know, we know the pastimes where there are problems, but very advanced devotee. Right? So, his inclination is to engage himself in the service of Krishna. So, the senses, it is their natural inclination to engage in the service of Krishna. So when it says the demigods are in control of the senses, the demigods themselves are engaging in the service of Krishna. That is their purpose. And because they give the ability, the reason they're actually giving the ability, like Indra gives the ability for the arms to work, is so you can use the perfection of using that ability is to use it in Krishna's service. And when you misuse it, then you get karmic reactions for misusing. That's the action.
So is that the right understanding that if the mind is focused on Krishna, the senses will be always engaged in
service of Krishna.
Yeah, of course. Because if you're thinking something in the mind, from the subtle comes the gross. If you're always thinking of Krishna, then you're only going to use your service for Krishna consciousness. So then the mind, it's said the deity of the mind is
Moon God.
Or actually it says in the Bhagavad Gita, it is Lord Aniruddha of the Chaturvyuha. He is the ultimate deity of that. So the mind is controlled by the Lord, meaning that the mind is meant to be fixed on the Lord. That is the purpose of mind. That is why we're given the mind. Right? Our minds are meant to be filled with thoughts of Krishna. Krishna says, Man Mana, think of me. That's the function of the mind, is to think, to feel, to will. All of these functions of the mind are meant to be used in the service of Krishna. Function of mind is to accept and reject. Accept what? Always remember Krishna, right? Reject what? Never forget Krishna. That is the function of the mind, like that. So that's what's being spoken of here. The mind is meant to be used in the service of Krishna. The senses are controlled by the devas, like that. So it's not so much an analogy, but it's factually how things are working. Does that make some sense? It's a little technical at this point, but okay. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as a fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. So, just like when we eat, if our digestion is good, as you get older it begins to slow down. But when your digestion is good, when you eat, you don't think, you know, here comes the pakora. You know, here is the now here comes the curd, right? Here is the halva. You don't think, you just take prasadam, right? And then if the digestion is good, everything just automatically is taken care of. When you do devotional service, automatically you get liberated, automatically, because you're engaged in the service of Krishna, which is transcendental. Krishna is transcendental. Krishna is situated in the spiritual world. That's why Prabhupada said in his final days in Vrindavan, before he left this world, he said the most fortunate souls in the universe are the pujaris of Krishna and Balaram, because they're directly serving the deity. And Kapila will explain this in a few moments, that when you directly serve the deity, you are in the spiritual world. You may not realize it because of our maya, our contamination, but the activity is the perfection of liberation. You're fully liberated because you're serving Krishna directly, satisfying Krishna's senses, the master of the senses. Therefore, you are liberated. So devotional service gives the ultimate liberation. You don't have to worry about liberation. You just focus on serving Krishna and automatically you become liberated. The other processes, the practitioners of the other processes focus on becoming liberated. And as devotees, we also become contaminated by this desire. I know for myself, quite often I think, Krishna, just end it all. Just take me back to the spiritual world. You know, but that's not the desire for bhakti, that's the desire for liberation. I'm asking Krishna to liberate me. I'm not asking for pure devotional service. I'm saying, Krishna, please just get me out of here. You know, I can't handle this anymore. Like that, you know, it goes through my mind a lot. I just think, just get me out. But that's not pure devotional service. You know? So you don't have to worry. You know, I haven't realized this point yet, but we don't have to worry. You know? We just have to serve Krishna. You know? And then you'll get the topmost liberation. You'll go back to the place where once you go, Krishna says in the Gita, you don't come back. Right? That doesn't happen when you go to the Brahma Jyoti. You will come back again. That's not the perfection of liberation. Right? And then Prabhupada points out in the third paragraph, Prabhupada points out that by devotional service we automatically gain control of the senses. Right? The senses become controlled by devotional. You don't have to have an extraneous endeavor. You don't have to say, well, now I control my tongue. Right? As Rupa Goswami points out, as Prabhupada points out in the Nectar of Instruction, how do you control the tongue? Right? By only eating Krishna Prasadam. By not eating bhoga, or food which is not offered to Krishna. You only eat food which is offered. Then you control the tongue automatically. Then it will come under control. I know when I was living here for 8 years as a brahmachari, I only ate prasadam. I didn't eat bhoga. Right? No bhoga, because it's just fully engaged. The only thing we eat is Krishna's prasad. Right? I remember when I first joined, then, you know, Prabhupada said for the first 6 months you can eat so much that you waddle like a duck. So we used to eat for the first 2 years, you know, as much as you could waddle, like, just eat so much prasadam. You know, just, you know, if I look back, you think I ate a lot now, you want to see what I used to. You know, just so much. You know, we used to eat the whole 9 o'clock offering sometime. You know, I'm serious. Like, we'd sit down, 3 or 4 of us, we'd just eat everything. It's not like now, you know, when so many people come for 9 o'clock arti. Back then, when I joined, hardly anyone came. Just a few people. We used to eat the whole 9 o'clock offering. You know, 16 puris, 3 gear subjis, ladders, you know, everything, nothing left. Sit down, 3 or 4 of us, we go and do Harinam on Friday night, come back. Right? And then our vow was we would not take rest until we finished everything. And we do this all the time. So much prasadam. But gradually the senses came under control. Gradually they came under control. Gradually, and then now you can have control of the senses. Control of the tongue. Right? It means that you only eat when it's time to honor prasad. You don't snack in between. Right? The control of the senses is there. Right? And only attracted to eating food which is offered to Krishna. Control of the senses is there. Right? And not eating rich foods. You know, having control. You know, control of the senses will come automatically by engaging in service to Krishna. If the senses are engaged in Krishna service, then automatically the senses will become controlled. Because Krishna is all attractive. Right? Krishna's nature is that he is attractive. Right? Krishna is the attractive personality. He's all attractive by nature. So when you engage your senses in his service, he captures your senses. So you only want to hear about him. You only want to smell things related to him. You only want to touch things related to him. All the senses become purified by service to him. That's the nature of devotional service. That's it. You had a point? Did you put your hand up? Someone put?
Nico.
Oh, was it you? Okay, I thought it was someone further across. Sorry.
Is it bona fide to eat the prasadam from the other philosopher? For example, Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna. Is it bona fide to eat prasadam from Buddhist?
From the Buddhist restaurant?
I mean, except for Buddhist temple.
Buddhist temple? It's not prasad. It's not prasad. Because they're not offering it with bhakti. Not that. The part of prasad means it has to be offered by the devotee. If it's not offered by a devotee, then it's not prasad. Krishna does not accept it. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Ashnami. He says, I accept it. But he only accepts it when there's bhakti. If there's no bhakti, he does not relish it.
There was a story about Lord Chaitanya when someone offered him a prasadam from the Buddhist. And he made the bird to come and to spoil that bed because according to Shastra, refused Mata Prasad, and that's what they thought. So the bird came and spoiled all the prasad, their prasad.
Yeah, but I think they often meet.
Yeah.
If you read the story, they often meet. That's why Mahaprabhu did it. They were Buddhists, but the leader of the Buddhists was envious of Lord Chaitanya. So they offered meat. They put the plate in front of them and they offered meat. And then the big bird came and dropped it on the head of the leader of the Buddhists, like that, and cut his head.
So I've basically heard in quite a few lectures that our gross body is a manifestation of our mind. The mind, in which the subtle body is manifested in the gross form, the way our body looks. So if the subtle body dissolves, and basically there is a gross body, can we still consider the case of a pure devotee whose subtle body is dissolved? Is this gross body material body, or that is a transcendental body? How do we understand that? Because when actually the subtle body is dissolved, there is no case for a those people exist, isn't it?
Yeah, the example is given that when you have a very fine piece of cloth, Banaswami has explained this, you have a very fine piece of cloth, and when it's like near a candle, sometimes it actually it becomes burnt, but it still stays like, how do you say it, like
it stays intact,
it stays in place, but actually because it's near the candle it's actually almost turned to ash, but it just, because it's very subtle, and as soon as someone touches it, it just goes like that. So he explains that when you perform devotional service, your gross body, it may still be there, but factually all the karma is gone. Because for a pure devotee, it's all gone. So now it's there, but as soon as death comes, it just disappears like that. It's already gone like that. But now it's just still there because it's parabdha. It's karma which was already there. So as soon as it disappears, then it's gone. Okay. A pure devotee who is attached to the activities of devotional service and who always engages in the service. A pure devotee who is attached to the activities of devotional service and who always engages in the service of my lotus feet never desires to become one with me. Such a devotee, who is unflinchingly engaged, always glorifies my pastimes and activities. So, the impersonalists, they want to become one with Krishna. But those who are devotees, they never accept oneness with Krishna. Their only desire is to serve Krishna. And you'll see in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, then the example is given of Hanuman, who is offered benedictions by Lord Ramachandra. At the end of the Battle of Ayodhya, Lord Ramachandra gives benedictions to everyone. And he says to Hanuman, what do you want? Do you want to become one? Do you want mukti? And then Hanuman says, if mukti means that I lose the opportunity to serve you, for me that is hell. So that is the nature of the pure devotees. They have no attraction to becoming one with Krishna. Their only desire is to serve Krishna. So the Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada mentions in the third paragraph, the fourth paragraph, Prabhupada mentions that the Bhagavatam automatically rejects Kaitava Dhamma, which means cheating religion. Because the Mayavadis, they may even comment on the Bhagavatam, but they say, actually, perfection is mukti. It is to become one with the Lord. And they say that all the stories in the Bhagavatam are just stories. It is fiction. It is mythology. These stories are not actually real. The Lord is not actually real, but it is all analogy and so forth. So Prabhupada says they have no faith. They do not understand. For a devotee, it's very simple. Lord Ram took the monkey army, right, to the shore of the Indian Ocean, and they threw rocks onto the ocean, and the rocks floated, and they walked across, and they fought with the 10-headed Ravana, and they killed him. So someone who doesn't have faith says that's mythology. Nice story, but that's just mythology. But for a devotee, it's just simple. It is the simple truth. That is the Lord. That is his lila. That is his pastimes. Like that. But for the non-devotees, because they're contaminated by this cheating conception of mukti, jnana or karma, then they cannot understand the simple process of bhakti. Okay. Oh, my mother... My devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the rising morning sun. They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent, and they also talk favorably with me. So this is the nature of devotional service. The nature of devotional service is that bhakti is to develop realization of Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the personality of Godhead. God has a personality, he has a form. And because we are contaminated, because our senses are contaminated, the Lord very mercifully appears within a form that we can perceive. And what is that form? That is the Acha Vigraha. He accepts the form of the deity so that he can accept our worship from our contaminated point. The spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, has installed Gaunitai, Radha Balabha, Jagannath Balarama Subhadra to accept our worship. Because our senses are contaminated, and by serving them, our senses will become purified. So that is why the spiritual master installs the deity. By serving the deity, then you become fully purified, your senses become purified, and then when you engage in hearing and chanting the Bhagavad Vidhi Marg, because your senses are purified by engaging in Pancharatrika Vidhi Marg, or deity worship, then when you hear and chant, it is much easier to control the mind. The mind is purified, and then you can focus on Krishna much easier. Whereas, I know for myself, I didn't do deity worship very much at all for many, many years, probably 17 years as a devotee. Not very much deity worship. But then by Krishna's arrangement, I began to worship Giriraj and engage my senses in the service of the deity. And now I've noticed the benefit, because the senses become purified, the mind becomes purified, the hearing and chanting improves. Right? It's easier to hear and chant, to absorb yourself. So that's why we need the parallel process, Pancharatrika Vidhi Marg and Bhagavad Vidhi Marg. Now, what is the biggest deity in the world?
Giri Govardhan.
Govardhan Hill. Giriraj is non-different from Krishna. He is Krishna. Right? And how big is Giriraj? 11 kilometers long. Biggest deity in the world. 11 kilometer deity. As Keshava Bharati Maharaj says, he is the biggest deity in the world and the curtains never close. You can take darshan of him 24 hours a day, and he's the biggest deity in the world. All you have to do is go there. And if we cannot go there, then he will come to you. As he's done here in Melbourne. He has come to us. Do we read 36? No? Upon seeing the charming forms of the Lord, smiling and attractive, and hearing his very pleasing words, the pure devotee almost loses all other consciousness. His senses are freed from all other engagements and he becomes absorbed in devotional service. Thus, in spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor. So Prabhupada says in the third paragraph, here the word vilas is very important. Vilas refers to the activities or pastimes of the Lord. It is a prescribed duty in temple worship that not only should one visit the temple to see the deity nicely decorated, but at the same time you should hear the recitation of the Bhagavatam or similar literature, which is regularly recited in the temple. Because for your deity work, this is the process of bhakti which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches. And Prabhupada says at the end of that paragraph, he says Mahaprabhu gave five processes of bhakti which were considered to be the most important. Right? Nam Kirtan, Sadhu Sangha, Bhagavat Shravan, Sri Mathura, Mathura Vas, and Srimurti Sevaya Sevan. Srimurti Shradaya Sevan. Right? So it means when you combine these five, this is the process of Mahaprabhu. When you combine these five, you get the most powerful devotional effect. You can worship the deity, but if you worship the deity, the more you hear about Krishna, when you worship the deity of Krishna, the deity worship comes to life. If you do deity worship, or if you take darshan of the deities, but you're not hearing anything about the deity worship does not come to life. Krishna does not come to life. You need to hear about him. That's why Prabhupada gave us Krishna book in 1970. So you can read about Krishna, so that when you see Krishna, then he comes to life. Right? So you need all of these processes to become perfect. Then that is the perfection of yoga. And the final verse. Thus, because he is completely absorbed in thought of me, the devotee does not desire even the highest benediction obtainable in the upper planetary systems, including Satyaloka. He does not desire the 8 material perfections obtained from mystic yoga, nor does he desire to be elevated in the kingdom of God. Yet even without desiring them, the devotee enjoys, even in this life, all the offered benedictions. Prabhupada says in the purport, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught that one should not desire material opulence or material reputation, nor should one try to enjoy material beauty. One should simply aspire to be absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord, even if one does not get liberation, but has to continue the process of birth and death unlimitedly. So a devotee, we do not desire to go to the heavenly planets. We don't desire to go even to Satyaloka, to Brahma's planet. We don't desire to merge into Brahma Jyoti. Devotees are not interested in these things. As devotees, we're not interested. You know, we don't want to go to Brahma. We're not so interested to realize the Paramatma. Right? We're interested to serve Krishna. Like that. And Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, in his purport, he says, do not even divert your mind to other forms of the Lord. Prabhupada says, for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, for the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we don't even necessarily divert our mind to the other forms. We may not even be attracted to Lord Ramachandra, or the other forms of the Lord, right? As much as we're attracted to the form of Krishna. This is the topmost form of Godhead. This is the sweetest form of Godhead. So we're not attracted to other things, lesser things.